Welcome. The deep state has its hands in everything, and I was in the middle of it for decades. When I blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program, the deep state turned on me. It ruined my life, took away my rights, threw me in prison, but they didn't break me. I fought back, and I still do. I'm John Kiriakou. On my show, The Deep State, I take you behind the geopolitical moves, the color revolutions, behind the politics and the politicians. We shine a light on where the deep state is hiding. I want to bring on now Natalie and Clayton Morris, hosts of the hit YouTube show Redacted. Somebody just asked me this morning if I thought this war in Iran was initiated to distract from the Epstein files. And I said, probably not specifically, but it sure does help. The Epstein files continue to offer a wealth of information, and nobody looks good in these files. Just this past week, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton testified in Chappaqua, New York, near their home, in a closed session of the House Oversight Committee. By all accounts, they didn't say anything that was self-incriminatory or self-incriminating, but the documents in many ways speak for themselves. For me personally, I'll tell you what I'm interested in the most. I'm sure that you're not, and that's cool, but the White House counsel, general counsel, the lead attorney for the White House under Barack Obama was a woman named Kathy Rimler. Yeah. And she repeatedly tried to broker a meeting or a lunch or a breakfast between Jeffrey Epstein and CIA Director John Brennan. And there was one email that she sent to Epstein saying, John Brennan gave me the CIA's top honor today. Pretty cool, huh? There was no evidence that Epstein responded. But I got to thinking, why in the world would the CIA director give the White House counsel the CIA's top award, which is usually reserved for CIA officers who have been killed in the line of duty, I might add. Why would he do something like that? And forgive me if I'm being cynical, but I got to thinking about the Tuesday morning kill list meeting. The Tuesday morning kill list meeting was a story broken by, I think it was the New Yorker magazine, in 2009 or 10, in which they found definitive evidence that John Brennan was hosting a meeting at the White House every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. It included a whole bunch of attorneys from both the White House, well, I shouldn't say both, from the White House, the Justice Department, and the CIA, as well as CIA operational personnel. And what they would do every Tuesday morning is come up with a list of people that they wanted to kill that week. So they would finalize the names. John Brennan was deputized by Barack Obama to sign off on the names. The teams would fan out all around the world. They would kill everybody on the list. And then the next Tuesday morning, they would meet and get the next list of people to kill.
Yes, and I believe it was like baseball trading cards, mm-hmm. the way that they had them.
That's right. What about this guy?
I think
what
most people don't know this about Barack Obama's administration.
Barack Obama was arguably one of the most murderous presidents in American history. And I want to add, that not a single one of these people had ever been charged with a crime, had ever had an opportunity to face his accusers in a court of law, or to be judged by a jury of his peers. These are people that we thought maybe, perhaps, someday could possibly pose a problem for the United States, so we kill them now so we don't have to kill them later. Do you think it's possible that that's why Kathy Rimler had this great relationship with John Brennan? She was in those meetings.
Brilliant. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Brilliant. I had not made that connection. I, too, was wondering about that. And she also offers up meetings with Boss at UNGA next week. Mm-hmm. And Boss, what she had left the Obama administration at the time, but only weeks prior.
Right.
And Obama was in town for UNGA, which is the UN General Assembly. And she said, "Do you, maybe you can meet with Boss." So yes, that's got to. That's brilliant. I hadn't made that connection. Absolutely, could be. And these Tuesday kill lists remind me very much of the bombings of the Venezuelan boats, because yeah, no due process. We just think maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, to your question about this being a brilliant cover-up, of course, because no one's talking about the Epstein files, you know, anymore.
No one.
That we're at war with Iran, it gets swept under the rug. And, of course, any kind of push to get anyone to testify or any arrests to be made, any of that, the massive calls for arrests in the United States. We could talk about the Norwegian prime minister. We could talk about Prince Andrew. But in the U.S., no arrests. There's still millions of documents that haven't been released yet. And now, of course, those calls get pushed to the back burner. It's like wag the dog. You like to think, no, this can't possibly be the case, that because we go to war, we forget everything else. But that's exactly what has happened. And the full mainstream media, that the only question they're asking now is about the war in Iran. And that will be the front page news for the rest of the, you know, maybe up until and through the summer, or however long this carries on. But I don't know. I hope members of Congress, I haven't really seen many members of Congress even still beating that drum. They've been focused on Iran, trying to maybe take away the president's war powers, abilities. And but there's really have that has fallen by the wayside, except for what we saw from the Clinton.
Yeah.
And again, I hate to believe, but it is true. It's like, we've been talking about it. We're going to go back to covering it again deeply. But the mainstream media has totally memory-holed it. By the way, the mainstream media didn't cover it anyway.
No.
So there was no coverage on the mainstream media. Almost Fox News totally almost ignored it, unless it was to defend President Trump. Pam Bondi's hearing, they decided not to take that live when she was being grilled by members of Congress, which it's very odd, because normally the Trump administration cabinet members, when they're in front of Congress, Fox News would go wall-to-wall coverage with that sort of a thing, but they knew that she was about to be grilled, so they didn't want to take that live so that Fox News viewers would think that there's a problem. So the mainstream media had already gone to great lengths, CBS News and others, to pretend that the Epstein files are not a thing, it's a Democratic hoax, ignore it, and move on.
But CBS specifically and the New York Times are implicated in the Epstein files. You know, the New York Times, the same reporter, Landon Thomas, who covered Epstein's prison sentence in 2008, is later in the Epstein files emailing Epstein.
That's right.
Warning him that another journalist
is
doing a profile on him. How do you go from covering someone's sex crimes to being their bro? I don't understand that. Nellie Bowles at the time in 2017 was their tech reporter. She claims that she was offered an opportunity to profile Epstein and that the New York Times newsroom said, sure, go meet with him in his apartment alone. Again, he's a convicted sex offender at this point, and they sign off on a female reporter going alone to his house. New York Times has not answered for either of those things. So that's inexcusable. So, of course, they're not going to make an excuse for that, but we should not miss it. CBS News now is implicated because Nellie Bowles is a co-owner of the Free Press, which is now owned by CBS News. Epstein asks her, how did it go introducing your new girlfriend to your parents? That new girlfriend is now her wife, who heads CBS News. Mm-hmm. So Epstein was aware of Barry Weiss at the time. That's interesting. Why was he interested in this relationship, these two women becoming married? That's interesting. No explanation, no official explanation, except Nellie Bowles saying, well, yeah, I wanted to profile him because he was interesting, because we used him a lot as sources in the New York Times.
But she was a tech reporter also.
A tech reporter, and she says the business page regularly relied on Epstein as a source. How many convicted sex offenders do they use as sources? I would think that would be kind of disqualifying, but
God.
It's really strange. That is extremely strange.
Yeah,
strange. You know, the prosecutor who prosecuted him in Florida later would have dinners with him. They don't cover that. That also was in the New York Times. The prosecutor knows what Epstein did. Like Clayton made the joke, you don't just come around on that. As a friend, like, yeah, that friend of mine,
I can tell you, as someone who served time in prison, and not just in prison, but a low-security prison, which is where all the pedophiles are, nobody comes around on child sex crimes. Nobody. That's right. Not normal. You know, this raises so many questions. I don't even know where to begin with you. I do know where to begin. I read a story just the other day about Epstein's attempt to purchase the Village Voice newspaper way back in the 90s. And it turned out that the sale didn't go through, but one of the local papers, and I think it was the Times, it may have been one of the other papers, the Daily News or something like that, but one of them wanted to do a profile on this guy. Who is this guy, Jeffrey Epstein? I'm talking about 1992 or 1993. Who is this guy, and what's the source of his wealth? And so they started doing this investigation, and they found that he had been a substitute math teacher in a junior high school. And all of a sudden, he's hobnobbing with billionaires and Wall Street titans, and he is buying the widest townhouse in all of New York City. So where does this money come from? They couldn't figure it out. I do remember it was the New York Post, because it was page 6, which is the gossip page. And what they ended up calling him was Mysterious Money Man Jeffrey Epstein, because they couldn't figure out where the money came from. Do we know any more now in 2026 than we knew in 1992 as to the source of his wealth?
No, and that's, I'm glad you brought this up, because that's exactly where I was going to go, which among the millions of documents we still don't have are the financial transactions.
There it is.
This is a brilliant sort of limited hangout that the DOJ has given us, which is Nellie Bowles email, you know, Pizzagate nuggets, you know, all of these like little drips and drabs of different pieces of information. And then we're sort of left to fend for these scraps and try to piece all of this together. But at the heart of it, and you could actually help us put all of it together, is to give us the financial transactions. Where did this money come from? Who was paying him? How did he have just millions of dollars he could donate to different campaigns? We do know little pieces of it, obviously, from Les Wexner and the money that we now know from that testimony and some of the emails that he had handed over, you know, power of attorney to his estate, his relationship with managing money of the Rothschilds, et cetera. That's about all we have, but we still don't have the money piece of this. We spoke to journalist Whitney Webb a few weeks ago, and her first interview in months, and she said that this is still the big piece of the puzzle here, is the finances, is who was funding this, where did this money go, and just show that to us. But of course, we now know, I think Nancy Mace admitted that she spoke to the DOJ, is like, we're done.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not releasing any more of this information now.
I wanted to ask you about
inconsistency,
that. I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me start with Natalie. Congress passed a law. The vote was something like 419-1 in the House and 99-0 in the Senate. The president signed it to release all of the Epstein documents. All of the Epstein documents. So around 3 million pages were released. There are another 2.7 to 3 million pages as yet to be released. But the Attorney General said 2 weeks ago, we're done. We're not releasing anymore. Yeah. That's it. Well, the Attorney General can go to prison for doing that, right? She's specifically defying a law. This is an act of Congress. It's been signed by the president. And she says, tough luck. What are you going to do about it? What can we do about it?
Well, I mean, again, who's going to sue her? The Department of Justice?
Well, it would be Congress that would have to enforce their own law. Right.
Subpoena her? I mean,
but why take a position like that? Why would she even say something like that publicly when the law is crystal clear?
Yes.
I mean, the heart of it is maybe what President Trump had said to Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is you cannot sign this discharge petition because too many of my friends will be embarrassed by this. And so maybe it's okay to share the emails, which are embarrassing enough for people like Peter Attia and Bill Gates and Deepak Chopra and Russian prostitutes and all of this stuff. But when we start getting into the realm of like you sharing financial transactions, that's when the cat is out of the bag.
Yeah. And I mean, we have emails with Epstein saying, oh, I need to give another million to the Clinton Foundation. Fine. What's this for? He doesn't even care. He doesn't even know. Where does it come from?
Where does it come from? It was a never-ending supply of money.
Right. And so think of, you know, we have a limit for how much we can gift our 15-year-old son. And if we exceed it, we expect the IRS to knock on our door. And they do, right? And they are regularly enforcing these things and for everyday Joes. But for Epstein, just it can flow. We don't know if it ever was reported, if it was, did he take a tax deduction? Right. We don't know. We have indications that he had won the state lottery a few times. And so, okay, that's interesting. Clayton and I watched a couple years ago the McMillions documentary. Did you see that?
The McDonald's Monopoly. It was fantastic.
The FBI gets a tip that someone's gaming the Monopoly game in McDonald's. And they're winning all this money because they've got this kind of scheme. I don't remember exactly what it is. And the FBI was on it.
Yeah, somebody was working at the where they would print the actual pieces and they would take them home and give them to like their relatives.
That's right. It was something to that effect. And the FBI enforced this and people went to prison because of this. But Epstein can continue to win the lottery. And so this raises all of these questions. What did you do about this? What was done about this? So it's like, here's the evidence, and nobody asked. There are reports of Donald Trump abusing people. Okay, you're telling us that's just reports. That's fine. What did you do about it? What was done? And we don't get that, but we are subject to lawfare. Again, if we have $1 not reported, Americans are subjected to a completely different treatment than the Epstein class, and we see it in front of us. It happens in front of us, and there's no way to be human and not resent it greatly.
John, we had the other day, we had former Congressman Dennis Kucinich on the show, and he had just penned, the reason we had him on is because he had just penned a new Substack piece called, like, Epstein, Iran, and basically the pedophile elites that are running everything, and they're above us. And his whole point of the piece was really how we as peons have to deal with the IRS and have to deal with this, but this sort of pedophile Epstein administration elites that are running the show get to run roughshod over all of us and call the shots, and we have to just sort of sit there and take it. And that's who's really running things, and they don't have to answer to the law.
They don't. When we come back, we will have more with the hosts of Redacted. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Stay right there. We're joined back again today by our guests, Natalie and Clayton Morris. They're the hosts of the hit show Redacted. Let me ask you both, too, about statutes of limitations. In the past couple of weeks, former Prince Andrew, now Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, was arrested and will be charged with a crime of providing some sort of sensitive economic report belonging to the British government to Jeffrey Epstein. But Peter Mandelson, the senior level Labour Party leader, the former minister, the former British ambassador to the US, was also charged with a crime coming out of the Epstein files. His crime is far more serious. The allegation is that he provided a classified defense ministry document to Jeffrey Epstein. So first of all, and I think I know what your response is going to be, why would Jeffrey Epstein be collecting classified documents? For whom?
Well, I think it's probably pretty obvious, but you'll be labeled an anti-Semite if you say that, you know, he was, as you have pointed out, an access agent collecting these things to be an access agent for Mossad, for MI6, for CIA. As Colonel Roxanne Towner Watkins has said, you know, you have to understand these people, like, they're operating in this one giant world where MI6, CIA, Mossad, very little daylight between those operations as access agents, you know, being used in that way as a honeypot or collecting this information for blackmail operations or otherwise. And so they're all part of the same thing. Operation Gladio, NATO's Stay Behind armies, like they all operate above the law and outside the law and outside of governments in many ways. So I think that that's really at the heart of it. But of course, if you say that, that's why they don't want us to see these financial transactions. They don't want to see like where these, wait a minute, this LLC was sending you money? Like where did this LLC come from? Oh, and once we can track it back and realize that this is, you know, this is some sort of a CIA cutout that was run through USAID or something, like they don't want us to see it because we'll be instantly able to track it once internet sleuths get their hands on this.
Yeah.
I have to ask you too, your opinions. Oh, you have among the best informed opinions on these Epstein issues that I've encountered. And, you know, I've maintained from the very beginning that Jeffrey Epstein was a Mossad access agent. And I've explained in many podcasts that what that means is if you are a foreign intelligence service and you want to recruit, you know, Bill Clinton or Bill Gates or Prince Andrew, you're not going to recruit them. They're not recruitable. So you do the next best thing. You recruit the guy who's next to them, the guy who has access to them. And that would be Jeffrey Epstein. But what information do you think is out there that the Israelis would be so interested in that they would go to all the trouble of creating this person, creating the persona of Jeffrey Epstein with the, you know, $80 million Manhattan house and the private island and the private jet? And what information could be so important that you're willing to essentially implicate the entire American government and go to that expense?
Well, don't you think, again, it's a long game?
That would have to be
several tentacles. Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the things that made me think this is the picture of Epstein with Michael Jackson and Michael Jackson's children that was released in the last 6 months, because he didn't know Michael Jackson personally, but he had enough influence to get backstage someplace in order to get access, something that I would have killed for as a lifelong Michael Jackson fan. I could not just walk into a trailer and say, hey, and take a picture with Michael Jackson. But Epstein had the access to that. Makes me think that Epstein is not, that he is an archetype of someone that still exists, and that there are several Jeffrey Epsteins. He's just the one that we know. And there are people like that who are regularly playing the influence game for several reasons. And it makes sense. If I wanted to control the world, I would like to have a lot of Epsteins that I could then just decide which string to pull and why. So yes, there were clearly sexual blackmail operations happening that gave access to intelligence that was useful to some people, but all three of those things is useful to have: influence, access, secrets, and blackmail. Mm-hmm. I think it was all of that, and I think that Jeffrey Epstein's are still spawned and operating in our world today.
Right, and I've heard it said by a CIA whistleblower that the CIA's main goal is if they know your thoughts, if they understand your thoughts, if they can have access to what you're going to do, that is like the ultimate level of intelligence for the CIA. And so to have that kind of close access to a Bill Clinton or people adjacent to Bill Clinton or Donald Trump or, you know, in that orbit, so they know they're, you know, or Mossad, exactly. I mean, I would assume it operates the exact same way, right? Which is to know your thoughts, to know what your plans are, to have to know your movements, to have that type of intelligence for how are they going to, when we decide to go against Iran, how will they, what are his cabinet members going to do? What will Susie Wiles do? What will his chief of staff do? What will Pam Bondi do? Like, what we're all, to know all of that is gold. I mean, it's maybe more valuable than gold, right?
I think that's
a big piece of it.
Yeah, I think you've hit it on the head. I think that's exactly what this is about. Natalie and Clayton, thanks very much for being with us today. And thank you for watching. This is The Deep State. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.